welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, we're heading into the midsummer season and we're on school break, but we're going to talk about school issues today with State Representative Andy Brenner, who is the chairman of the House Education Committee, and State Representative Andy Thompson. Before we do that, of course, this week, breaking news with President Trump announced his replacement for the court as a position came open, as we had a retirement on the U.S. Supreme Court. And now we know who it is. It's Brett Kavanaugh is the nominee to the court, and there is overwhelmingly positive review about this candidate, is that he is a constitutionalist. He believes is looking at the law instead of making law. He was serving on the 12th Circuit Court of Appeals. He was an original appointment by President Bush. And, of course, the radical left is going apoplectic over this nominee. There are some concerns about him and some of his decisions. There's 300 of those decisions in which, of course, proponents and opponents of the candidate will be poring over as he is now working Capitol Hill and the U.S. senators to garner support for his nomination to the court. We're going to be breaking that out in detail and having guests on future programs to talk about this nominee to the court and what it means for the court going forward, but certainly another victory for the Trump administration as they get to pick now his second pick to the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, let's turn back to Ohio, as there was breaking news this week as a state Supreme Court member, that is Mr. DeWine, Pat DeWine, the son of Mike DeWine, the Attorney General, he announced that he was recusing himself from the ECOT, that's the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow's case before the Supreme Court, and he was recusing himself from this case and what that actually might mean. And then just yesterday, there was a major decision in an appeals court, and the appeals court basically came down with a decision in favor of ECOT, and this is very interesting. It says ECOT may proceed with an appeal on the $60 million repayment the court rules, reading from the Columbus Dispatch. ECOT won a court decision on Tuesday, but no, it wasn't the big Ohio Supreme Court ruling, according to the Dispatch. But the Ohio 10th District Court of Appeals ruled that the now-closed Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, ECOT, can proceed with an appeal in Franklin County Common Pleas Court. This all began back in January as far as the closure of ECOT in the middle of the school year. And just we're going to take a little clip here as part of that press conference, because this really was a major moment in Ohio's history, as the largest, what would be tantamount to the largest school in Ohio's history, closing in the middle of the year. Let's go to that press clipping right now.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your comments on this. And we are at a crisis shutdown, similar to what was in Washington, only we have 12,000 students that are at stake who do not have a school as of today because of the decision of last Thursday night. And we are here today because there is a way forward. And if the parties will come together, similar to what happened in Washington, when the parties came together and averted a government shutdown, well, we're hoping that these parties will come together and avert the final shutdown of this school, which represents 12,000 students and nearly 2,300 graduating seniors. And they're today wondering what is their future. And so we're here today because we care. We're here today because they do have a voice. And that's why this has to be addressed. And we're asking the parties that are involved to come together, both ECOT and the Ohio Department of Education, the superintendent, and one other member that could really play a key role, and that is Governor Kasich. I have here today a personal letter to the governor that immediately following this press conference, I'm going to deliver personally to his office on the 30th floor at the Rife Center. We're hoping the governor will bring the parties together and find a workable solution so that ECOT can finish out the school year for the 12,000 students. Let's understand the magnitude of what we have here. 12,000 students is equivalent to a major school district in Ohio, like Akron, Ohio, or Toledo, actually shutting down in the middle of the school year. No one would ever permit that. But yet, because they can't be seen because it's an online school, and these are students who depend on this form of education for a variety of reasons. My family, actually, my wife and I raised 8 children. We're at the end of that line with our baby at home now. She's 17. She's actually at a public school. But we've done it all. We've done homeschooling, private school. We've done online school and, of course, public school. These are the school choice options currently in Ohio, as well as charter schools. But what we see in ECOT, and this isn't a referendum on the good and bad of ECOT, but that it represents a whole body of students and Ohioans who are accessing this school option, and that's why it has to be addressed today. That's why we're asking for the legislature, but more importantly, the Ohio Department of Education, and to sit down with the members of ECOT, with the governor's office, to work out a solution, and they need to do it quickly. Time is a-wasting. As you know, that every day on the calendar year for a senior is critical that they get the requirements completed for graduation. So these are our future Ohioans that we're advocating for today. I so appreciate State Representative Andy Thompson, State Representative Andy Brenner, and of course the chairman of the Education Committee, who has been, as you can hear in his comments, he's been engaged in this. This didn't happen for him overnight. He's been actually prophesying for 8 months that we're going to have a crisis and there's a way to avert it. But for some reason, the Ohio Department of Education, the superintendent, ignored his warnings as to what might occur, as to what happened on Thursday night when the final agreement or offer was turned down by the Department of Education. The public has to wonder at this point that they pared back their payments to $1.9 million a month and then offered to sell their corporate headquarters valued at $6.8 million. It sounds to me that they were willing to do whatever it took to get to the end of the school year. Why did the department at that point just say no? And I think the general public understands that doesn't sound right to anybody. So that's why we're here today, is to advocate that this school be able to continue to the end of the school year. The other issues will be worked out along the way. Obviously, the court case is before the Supreme Court. That will be reviewed, obviously, and so those decisions can be made. But let's not forget about the 12,000 students. They want to know today, does anybody care? Well, we're here to say we do. We do care. Thank you, Representative.
And that was my comments at the press conference back on January the 23rd at the Ohio State House with State Representative Andy Brenner and State Representative Andy Thompson, who are with me on the phone. And gentlemen, we're fast-forwarding 6 months, and a lot of has been done since then. The ECOT did not reopen, unfortunately. Those kids were basically, it was a mismatch as to where they might have ended up, and some of them were getting reports, were not able to get into other schools to finish up their school year. That is very unfortunate, very sad, and actually a travesty of justice, in my opinion, from the Ohio Department of Education, who ultimately is responsible because they did not take care of the kids. And then now we're looking at the courts and what's decided. Representative Brenner, your thoughts.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me on again as well. Yeah, there are several things. Actually, within the last couple of weeks, our Channel 10 news out of Columbus reported that there were 2,300 students that still hadn't been accounted for from ECOT by the Department of Education. And by my own calculations, 420 students who are disabled have not been accounted for. Yesterday, we had the 10th District Court of Appeals come out and actually rule in favor of ECOT. This is, I think, one of the first rulings that they've had in favor. It says, and right from the reading, which, by the way, Jennifer Bruner, who's a Democrat, who wrote the opinion of the court. She wrote, we hold that ECOT is entitled to the opportunity to dispute not just the substantive and procedural merits of their action, which is already being done by declaratory and injunctive action and the Open Meetings of Act litigation, but also to appeal the particular findings and decisions of the administrative adjudication, especially as to the clawback of funds already appropriated and distributed by the state of Ohio. ECOT's sole assignment of error is sustained. And then they conclude, basically, they have a right to go back and say that to appeal this ruling on the $60 million and actually a total of $80 million that the state says that they owed them. And so to me, that's a major, you know, that doesn't mean that the court is going to rule in favor of ECOT, but it does mean that they actually have to look at it. And they didn't even look at it up until this point. So I think it's a major ruling in favor of ECOT. And I think this also sets back all these people saying and rushing to judgment that they needed to claw back the money from all these from the school, when in fact it looks like they were at least following the law and trying to educate 12,000 kids. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, the Supreme Court still has to make their decision. That was referenced in this. And if the Supreme Court, you know, if they rule in favor of ECOT, then I question, you know, what's the state of Ohio going to do, especially given the fact that the school has been shut down. I know I've talked to a lot of parents of the kids of the school, and they would re-enroll their kids back into the school. So it's a very interesting and complicated case, and it's as you said, it's very unfortunate, especially for the 12,000 families who were disrupted in the middle of the school year, and then we're left now with, you know, 2,300 potential kids who we don't know where they went, and they have, and the Department of Ed has not been able to track them down.
State Representative Andy Thompson, back in January, we put a letter before the governor asking him for his involvement, and he basically washed his hands of it and said, I'm not going to get directly involved. Yet we understand after that there was communication on that same day that he wrote to the superintendent, urging the superintendent and the department to make sure that these kids get processed quickly into other schools, that he did not want to see anybody left behind. That mission was not accomplished. According to the report that Representative Brenner just indicated by Channel 10, 2,300 students still unaccounted for by the Ohio Department of Education. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think you, Chris, you and I have discussed in the past that, you know, they have to be accountable to some of the federal folks for the money that they receive as well, because there are funds attached to these students. And so, while at the same point that they're saying that these folks were not appropriately being attending school, they're trying to collect money from the federal government on behalf of these students. It's a very vindictive, I think, and very political-based approach to these students in this school. It was as if they really wanted to nail a scalp up on the wall, and they didn't really care about how they had to do it. And, you know, they try to, you know, point to this dollar figure, but, you know, I think fundamentally it goes back to how this oversight was changed, and then they applied it retroactively. And so without any real warning, all of a sudden they put ECOT in the penalty box, and they're trying to claw back this money and making it, trying to kind of blow the whistle and say it's some big financial, penalty on the state of Ohio. The ones who are really paying the penalty are the teachers, the students, the parents, the folks who really relied upon this option as one that worked for them, and they had not found success or satisfaction in the public school system. So when you take that option away from them without any really easy logical alternative, you've really put a real burden on them, and you've really really pulled the rug out from under them. So go ahead.
Well, let's just also, this is a school that was showcased by Governor Kasich. He actually honored them and went to their graduation, spoke to the graduation services just a few years ago, and heralding how great of an option this is for special needs kids, for those who are maybe beyond school age,
but
still
want to
get that still want to get their diploma and get on with life. He was heralding that as a success, and yet turning around and basically trying to put this school in the grave. It just didn't make sense, and to close it in the middle of school year. So even if you had issues with ECOT, why close it in the middle of the school year? It seemed like a very vindictive move, and one in which the Ohio Department of Education and the school sponsor and those who, we would have to say, the Teachers Association and the Teachers Union, mm-hmm. wanted to see this school closed. They see it as a competition to what they're doing in public schools. And yet this was a viable option that 12,000 students and families chose to use to educate their children. Representative Brenner, you pointed out that this was heading that way. You forecasted and said, look, we need to deal with this now. You spoke before the state school board on multiple occasions in the months leading up to, but they seem to ignore your appeals. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they did, and it's atrocious. You cannot put 12,000 families in a position where they're going to have to scramble in the middle of the school year. But not only that, we had to put into the state budget, or not the state budget, but in Senate Bill 216, a temporary stopgap fix for a couple of the other schools who took in all of these students. I believe Ohio Virtual Academy took in 4,000 or 5,000 of the students from ECOD in the middle of the school year. Well, not only do the students need to learn now a new system and learn their curriculum and how they're handling it, they also need to, it took them a month or two just to get into the system, and it was probably going to take them several months to get organized and understand the system and get caught up with the way they handle it. So doing this in the middle of the school year especially made a major disruption in the school year. So we had to put something in Senate Bill 216 that basically said that these students can be held harmless, or the schools can be held harmless for taking in these students because, they didn't have anywhere else to go. And in the case of a lot of these schools were already at capacity. They actually had to go out and hire a lot of the ECOT teachers in order to be able to take the students in. And then I spoke to those teachers. Those teachers had to learn the new system as well. So this was just a fiasco in the making. Yes, I was preaching. There were a bunch of state reps that were, trying to let the state board and the superintendent know. But they kept clawing back more and more money to the point where it forced the Education Service Center of Lake Erie West to shut them down. And that's what happened. And to this day, we still don't know where some of those kids are.
Well, and there was a lot of collateral damage here, too, just not only the students and at-risk students that were trying to get their education, but also parents of special needs students and teachers. Let's not forget that. And the court basically ordering, and the overseer of the bankruptcy or closure of ECOT, he basically cut by one day short where the teachers would have had a full calendar year and gotten their health benefits. They were left without health benefits. I think that was an eye-opener, even to their liberal counterparts who may not agree with online schools or charter schools and see them as competitors. They saw that as an affront also to their profession, and said, boy, I wouldn't want that happening to me. That's terrible that happened to them. So I think even those on the right and left side of this issue, people saw that this was not handled appropriately and that there really was it seemed like a vindictive effort to shut this particular school down, which actually was Ohio's largest online school, 12,000 students. We're talking about ECOT. Now, of course, what's happened in the months of those of you not reading in the newspapers, most of it in the Columbus Dispatch, it played out in a drama, the auctioning of the facilities, the building, and all of that. So ECOT is essentially no more. What is left is a court decision. Now, the one that came down favorably, that they are clear to appeal the $60 million in repayments back to the state. And again, that happened because they changed the rules on them in the middle of a school year. And so it's like you wake up one day and you find yourself out of compliance of the law. And then they start back charging you all this money, folks. And that's what we're talking about here. The case is before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court really has to come down on the side of ECOT. In spite of the barrage of the negative articles in the media, the liberal media, the Dayton Daily News, the Toledo Blade, the Columbus Dispatch, the list is endless, that have been beating up on ECOT now for 2 full years, it runs against their narrative. By the way, they barely forced themselves to write this article of this case that went on the side of ECOT because it makes their narrative look ridiculous, which it is. If the court, the Supreme Court, comes down the side of ECOT saying that you cannot make rule in the middle of the road, basically, you can't make retroactive law and then find people out of compliance, which, by the way, they're going to have to decide that because it has so many implications for so many other applicable areas of law and business within our state. It would open up Pandora's box. Representative Thompson, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say this is an unfortunate chapter in the state of Ohio. I think this administration has gotten a lot of things wrong on education. We don't have enough time to count them all off. But, 512 is another piece of legislation they have that they're bringing forward. So just a lot of, I would say, more politics than good policy, more, personal agendas, more, just insider fighting and folks just trying to take out, take out their anger on they're just kind of picking patsies, and they're picking folks that they can go after. And so it's just a very unfortunate timing, and fundamentally the kids caught in the crossfire. It's terrible, and I hope that that we do get a good decision from the Ohio Supreme Court that recognizes what this appeals court has found as well, and gives ECOD an ability to kind of rectify the situation, because it's been I think tragic, and it's been a very unfortunate outcome.
Representative Brenner, you've been warning that this is actually an assault on school choices. We have it in Ohio with charter schools, online schools, even homeschoolers realize that they might find themselves out of compliance if the rules change in the middle of the stream. So this has woken up a sleeping giant, as it were, and you forecasted that. You were prophesying, saying, hey, we got a problem here. And people have woken up to the fact and said, hey, you know what? He's absolutely right. We have a problem here. Now, this, if the court comes down with a favorable decision, it may not save ECOT, but it certainly is going to save the rest of these online and charter schools. Your thoughts, Representative Brenner?
Yes, exactly. In fact, I guess all these entities, especially I know Richard Cordray has been adamantly hounding, and the Democrat Party have been hounding ECOD and just beating it up. Well, they're beating it up because they want a way in to basically wipe out a lot of school choice. They don't want to admit that, but they say that they want school choice to include, they should all have, more transparency and more regulations and so forth. Well, they want to make them just like the traditional public schools, which they're not. And that's just not acceptable. And it's one of those things where if they get their way here, they're going to continue pushing. And so that's what we've got to push back. And anybody who's a homeschooler in favor of school choice, they need to speak up. And they need to speak up at the ballot box this November as well.
Absolutely. Because really, we've progressed as far as school choice in Ohio, but this has been school choices on a retreat. Everybody begins to understand that. I've been speaking to groups around the state. I know you have as well. The concern is there. The concern is real. And we need to let our legislators know just how we feel about school choice options in Ohio, that we like the opportunity to have school choice. We want to keep it going. We don't want there to be a redress or a retreat of school choice. Representative Thompson, your thoughts?
I very much agree with you, Chris. And I think, we've still got the problem of Common Core. It's the bland leading the bland. I mean, they're trying to make everybody equally mediocre in this state. And that's why school choice plays an important role. I would like for the folks who are advocates for school choice to realize that Common Core needs to go. And I think we can make things better for parents and students in this state as we kind of extract our state from these ill-conceived ideas. And so we've got a lot of work to do. I'm not going to be around to help with it, at least in my official capacity. But I hope Representative Brenner, and if he becomes Senator Brenner, will lead the fight to rectify all these problems that we face.
Well, thank you both, Representative Thompson, Representative Brenner, for coming on the program today. Thank you for taking a stand for these kids and for school choice in Ohio. We applaud you both, and we'll be waiting with anticipation as what the state Supreme Court is going to decide on this case, and we'll have you back on to comment once the decision does come down. If you missed any of today's program, please log on to our website at ohioca.org. You'll also see the articles about the ECOT, also what we discussed today, and some updates. Gentlemen, thank you both for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both, and we'll be giving you all an update as to how this progresses, and we should find out something very soon. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus us fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, this has been a busy week here in Ohio at the Ohio State House and also in Washington, D.C. as news is really breaking left and right. For those of you that are a listener to this program, you know that we supported the Ohio Pastor Protection Act, House Bill 36, and we're urging calls to the Ohio legislature in support of this. Good news, it passed committee yesterday and today it passed on the Ohio House floor. It's now on to the Ohio Senate, and this was a bill that was stuck in committee for over a year. Dozens of pastors, clergy from across the state came in and testified in support of this legislation that protects religious freedom for pastors and churches, and we're glad and thankful that it is making its move through the Ohio legislature. More about that on our website. Also, breaking news, Justice Kennedy has announced his retirement from the U.S. Supreme Court. That means in the coming months, President Trump will be nominating another member to the U.S. Supreme Court. And of course, lots of breaking news all over at this time. We're going to be focusing on a promise that President Trump made to the Midwest and to Ohio and to West Virginia and to Pennsylvania, and that was to the coal miners. When he ran for office, he said that coal was going to make a comeback, and we're going to do for our coal miners. We're not going to leave them behind. 8 years of the war on coal has reaped devastation in these communities that actually kept the lights on for over a century all over America. And we were leaving them behind. And on the front end of that war was Mr. Bob Murray. And let us give them a proper introduction because we're going to kick off our roundtable discussion and a continuation of how the coal industry is doing in the Trump era. With me on the phone is Chairman and CEO of Murray Energy, Mr. Bob Murray. Also joining us is Jim Martin, Chairman of the 60 Plus Association, and Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Chris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Murray and Jim and Congressman. We're so glad that you've taken time to be with us. We know that, Congressman, you're in and out of votes as we speak on the floor. Thank you for joining us. Do you have a little time with us, Congressman?
It'll be spotty. It depends on what time they call votes. We're expecting votes here within the next 10 minutes or so, but I'll be with you as long as I can.
Okay, let's get right to a media clip with Mr. Murray on a recent broadcast.
The New York Times headline was false, a very poor headline. The article itself was not bad. I do want to correct what Tyler just said. I have never blasted the Trump administration or even criticized them. Indeed, I think he's done a wonderful job to assure low-cost electricity in America. and to shore up the reliability of the electric power grid. Today, Angela Merkel announced that Germany is no longer going to close any more coal-fired plants. They need them. You have a power blackout right now in Las Vegas. It is true that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission failed to enact the immediate reforms necessary to ensure the reliability, resiliency, and the security of the grid, but they were directed to do so by Secretary Perry, and that is the Trump administration. He has been very supportive of coal. A lot of it was low-hanging fruit in overturning these regulations, Contessa, because many of the Obama regulations were illegal, so they were very easy to overturn by executive order.
The New York Times got its hands on a letter that you had sent to the administration with sort of a wish list, a to-do list that would be important for the coal industry. And when you're looking through that, rolling back regulations, that got done. Overhauling who sits on the FERC commission, on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that got done. Four of those commissioners were Trump appointees. Unanimously, this commission voted against what would effectively subsidize coal and nuclear power. How does that sit with you?
That does not sit with me well. You see, windmills and solar panels are subsidized by the taxpayer, 30% production tax credit, and electricity from a windmill and a solar panel costs 26 cents a kilowatt hour. My coal-fired electricity costs 4 cents a kilowatt hour, and America needs it. There is bias among the two Democrats, Glick and LaFleur, on the FERC. They are obviously never going to support coal or nuclear power. The other two employees against, the chairman himself, McIntyre, and particularly Rob Paulsen, are wrong in their decision, and it needs to be overturned.
Well, you know, Mr. Murray, I thought you did a great job on that, by the way. Of course, it's a hostile environment with liberal media, but I thought it was great that you called out those people that are sitting on the federal FERC, because you see a lot of politics that's being played out in some of these agencies that have been obstructing the Trump administration's attempt to move forward with a solid energy policy going forward. Your thoughts, sir?
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Chris, is feckless. Absolutely feckless. It's more of the swamp that we've had in Washington, D.C. They fail to recognize that you cannot store sunshine, you cannot store wind, and you can't store natural gas at a power plant, but you can store coal and nuclear power. And let me tell you what they have done to America. We only had one cold snap this past winter in Ohio, December 27th to January 8th. And this will be very important to your listeners because their electric power supply is in jeopardy and they're paying a lot more for their electricity than they need to. So that is what Secretary Perry, with President Trump behind him, directed the FERC to address. They failed to do so. What happened during that cold snap between December 27th, January 8th? 2 million Americans in the PJM interconnection and in New York lost their electric power. 22 people died in these 12 days. That's the one cold snap we had. So the United States Department of Energy, National Energy Technology Laboratory, they call it, investigated the matter. What happened? Coal that had been supplying 29,000 megawatts a day during this period of time went to 46,000, supplied 89% of the electricity.
Yes.
Nuclear power supplied a small improvement. Windmills, the winds were up to 50 miles an hour. They provided zero electricity. The solar panels, it was cloudy, zero electricity. Natural gas said, well, we have 37,000 megawatts in reserve. They had zero because the gas pipelines to the power plants froze up.
and the gas could not be supplied, plus home heating took the precedence of what gas was available, so there was none available for these power plants. But coal stepped up with nuclear power and provided 89% of the power.
That's right.
In spite of that, the price of gas, what little gas there was, went from $3 a 1,000 cubic feet to $95 and over $175 in New York City. Electric power prices went to $500 a kilowatt hour during those 12 days. It normally cost $28 a kilowatt hour.
Right. And it was coal and nuke that carried the load during that cold snap. Now, Congressman Johnson, this hasn't gone without notice among your colleagues in Washington, has it?
No, it hasn't, Chris. We've had a number of hearings on energy and commerce. I've met personally with Secretary Perry, and you've already heard Mr. Murray talk about the support that that the Secretary is giving and that the President are giving. I'm right there in lockstep. We've encouraged FERC to solve these problems. I've had personal conversations with the chairman of FERC about these issues, and other members have as well, and we will continue to address them. I think Mr. Murray, you know, makes a very valid point, and I've been saying this since 2011, and Bob has heard me say this many, many times. Wind and solar and alternative fuels, they're not going to be able to provide the baseload energy to our electric grid. We must continue to have coal as a part of our energy profile. And I knew back in 2014 that the Europeans were going back to coal-fired energy because they told us that in several countries when we took an energy and commerce trip over there to talk to the folks about energy. And I specifically asked them then because they had a goal, a stated goal to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030. And I said to the European Union energy minister, I said, how can you even think that you can accomplish that if you're going back to coal-fired energy? And now I was setting the stage for the question. I'm glad they're going back to coal-fired energy, but I was asking a question that I already knew the answer to. I said, because our president in the United States says we're going to reduce carbon emissions by only 30%, and in order to get there, he's shutting down the coal industry in our country. How are you guys going to reduce it by 40% by increasing your use of coal, and yet our nation, our president, says we've got to shut down coal in order to accomplish that? And he basically looked at me and said, you know, it's lip service. You know, that's our goal. But our ratepayers are no longer willing to pay the exorbitantly high price for electricity. So, no, it is not going unnoticed here, Chris. We are deeply engaged in this conversation.
Well, that's right. There's a lot of interest at the table, obviously. There's, you know, those from renewables, gas, coal, nuke, coming, and all those that represent them coming to the table. But what's actually important is that the Trump administration promised a solid energy policy going forward, not the nonsense that we've had to live under the last 8 years, which was really a war on coal, which was actually crippling the reliability of the grid. Congressman, I know that you were on committees about actually the national security concern about the reliability of the grid. And by the way, the grid is... the national grid is pretty much a new phenomenon outside of around 1999-2000 is when it came online. This group named PJM and all the readings that I've done here. So, Mr. Murray, there was a lot of gamesmanship going on at the beginning of the year. The Trump administration, through Mr. Perry and the Energy Department, were trying to put forward some policy. And then FERC, which is the Federal Regulatory Energy Commission, it's a bureaucratic panel. And basically, they rejected the suggestion. Even when this report that you were quoting came out where coal and nuke over-delivered during the cold snap, where gas underperformed and renewables were almost non-existent, not keeping the lights on in the East Coast. And a lot of that energy is coming out of the Midwest, right here in Ohio and Pennsylvania and West Virginia. Your thoughts, sir?
And that cold snap that I referred to earlier, 12 days, December 27th to January 8th of this year, coal saved $3.5 billion to the electric utility ratepayers in the PJM alone. That was $288 million a day to be there that we saved that couple on fixed incomes. That single mom or that manufacturer of a product who needs a lot of electricity and low-cost electricity to compete in the global marketplace. And this generation that stepped up during this cold snap is scheduled to all be closed.
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute because I want to talk to let Jim Martin come in here because he represents those on a fixed income with a 60-plus association. And, Jim, you've been monitoring this because you're advocating for seniors and those on a fixed income in their retirement years and how this is all going to play out for mom and dad who are basically trying to live out the remainder of their years and live on the income that they raised over their lives. Your thoughts, Jim Martin?
Well, first of all, let me thank Bob Murray and Bill Johnson. They've touched upon the situation here with FERC. And by the way, those two Democrats, Glick and O'Fleur, they never were with us. But thank goodness the president has gone over their head. And Bob, he has done what he said. He promises made, promises kept. He's kept his promise to you. And just in the last 2 weeks, though, despite President Trump's leadership to address the urgency of doing something about coal and nuclear plants, that impact our national security. And that's what it's all about. It is about national security. And Bob Murray, you've been bringing to everybody's attention, but what you're up against is this resist movement out there with these wacky enviros and their friends in the liberal media. And they're trying to discredit the president and you. They're trying to really continue the war on coal. They've now added the nuclear industry. And by the way, you said it best, Bob, when you said it's a bureaucratic cop-out, I think, by FERC. And I've been quoting you in other talk shows, Bob, if you don't mind. I see that, as Bob Murray has said, if it were not for the electricity generated by our nation's coal-fired and nuclear power plants, we would be experiencing massive brownouts and even blackouts in the country. And again, coal. King Coal has far outperformed all these other fuel sources. And Bob Murray so aptly puts it, you can't store sunshine. So this is a war going on out there. And yes, I've got so many seniors. 60 plus has got, we represent more voters, more consumers, more users, more beneficiaries than any of these companies and these enviros out there and a bunch of trade associations. With us on this issue, we've got seniors all over the country. They depend on the electricity sources that are reliable and affordable.
And affordable.
And again, as Bob pointed out earlier, the price of natural quintupled. It went so far out of sight. It added to the cost of electricity humongously, as Bob has pointed out. This is a war going on here with you. Bill Johnson is your best advocate, Mr. Murray, if you don't know that, here on Capitol Hill. And by the way, I think they're going to move it out of the Energy Committee, maybe into the Senate Armed Services Committee. If they do, guess what? With the illness of John McCain, the chairman now of Armed Services again is none other than Senator Jim Inhofe. And he is a strong advocate for what we all believe in, plus the fact that he is such a strong advocate of Scott Pruitt. And I put out a press release the other day about Scott. And the reason the Democrats want Scott Pruitt's head is because he took an action to undo all the tremendous harm done by the radicals in the previous administration. So we got our work cut out for us.
Well, that's right. And we do have our work cut out for us in keeping the momentum going. Now, Mr. Murray, you said just before Jim weighed in about advocating for the seniors that all of this energy, this generation is happening right here in the Midwest. And, of course, First Energy, which makes Akron in Northeast Ohio its home and headquarters, they fought the war on coal with you because they, more than any other energy company in the country, was 70% coal generation. They have nuke plants within their line of energy plants, of course, two here in Ohio, one over there, one or two over in Pennsylvania. And yet, First Energy Solutions announced bankruptcy. And so this is actually presenting a challenge and a problem and actually a crisis, because you're talking about two major nuke plants, the ones that kept the lights and the energy going into the eastern seaboard during the cold snap. And then those coal plants along the Ohio River, they're the ones who delivered the energy. Congressman, we got a problem here.
Chris, I hate you. You're right. We do, and I'm. That's why I continue to have conversations with the secretary, with the president, and with FERC. And with that, Chris, I hate to cut my time short. They have just called votes. I've got to run over to the House floor. Count me in. I'm still the champion for coal, Mr. Murray. I look forward to seeing you again soon, Jim. Always good to hear from you.
God bless you, Congressman. Thank you.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue.
That was Congressman Bill Johnson joining us this afternoon. He is in and out of floor votes on the House floor in the U.S. Congress. And we're continuing our discussion with Mr. Murray of Murray Energy and Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association. I'm your host, Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Mr. Murray, there's a lot we need to get to here because we've covered so many areas over the last couple of years and all the challenges that you were facing, obviously, in the coal industry. One of them was the delivery of the rail the rail lines basically were holding up coal shipments. When you talk about a war on coal, literally when you talk about supply chain and you're talking about delivery and, an air campaign, you were doing it all. And then here to find out that the rail lines were backloading coal shipments. Has there been an improvement there, sir?
Not a bit. The Congress created the problem with the railroads by giving them monopolies when they broke up Conrail and other railroads. There are only basically five major railroads now in the United States of America. And Congress gave them a region for the country where they have a monopoly. They're poorly managed. They're run by their unions. They're very inefficient. To stay in business in the coal industry, which is vital to the state of Ohio, we've had to export our coal. We'll export 22.5 million tons of coal around the world because they still want our coal. They know it's lower cost by 1/7 of a solar panel, and it's 1/4 the cost of electricity from natural gas, and the gas isn't even available in most regions of the world. But we can't get it out of the country because of the inefficient, the most inefficient thing in America is the federal government. Next to it is a railroad. But they've been given a monopoly. They're supervised, supposedly, by the Surface Transportation Board, which has really become a tool of the railroad themselves. The government has, again, been feckless in overseeing how the railroads are operated. So we have these customers around the world wanting our coal, and we can't get it out of the country because of the terrible railroad service. Half the trucks on these highways, or more than that, wouldn't be there if the railroads were efficient in hauling the products that these trucks do.
Well, that's an issue we're going to have Congressman Johnson back on about. I know he had to run, but I agree with you. They were talking at the Transportation Committee today down there at the Ohio State House of computerized trucking. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be next to one of those. I mean, I've already seen those headless Uber driver crashes and things like that. It's ridiculous. And it goes back to, we've got good infrastructure in this country, but it's being mismanaged. I'm going to bank that Mr. Trump is going to make sure that things get done along those lines, and that we're going to see a renovation of our infrastructure, including railways. And God bless you, sir, for all you're doing.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you, and we'll be watching very closely as what Mr. Perry is going to release, and we'll have you back on the program to discuss that. Thanks, Mr. Murray.
Thank you.
God bless. That was Mr. Murray, who is the chairman and CEO of Murray Energy. And, of course, if you missed any of today's program, you can listen to it in its entirety on our website at ohioca.org. Also, if you need an update on the news items of this week, also available on our website at ohioca.org. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.